You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with the one and only Ed Stetzer.
You know, we should tell people what we do before we begin the show, because it's like no one would know. And you know, the person, like, we have an engineer. What's the name of our sound engineer, by
James,
the way?
James West. Yeah, James, he is the man.
Talk to him off camera. Hello, James. So we actually do this three, we count down and then we clap, and it sounds really, really, really weird.
So. He probably doesn't even need it. It's to loosen ourselves up.
Exactly. But anyway, it's all part of the fun.
All right. So, well, you know, anyway, we are life. 9 episodes away from episode 300.
So how do we go so quickly? Is there like another person doing episodes with us?
I don't understand this. You've said that way too many times. You just sound like the old grandpa that just is losing his memory.
I am the old grandpa.
All right, but what do you think we should do for episode 300, Ed?
I don't know. Like, isn't there like a movie called The 300? Was that a good movie? I didn't see it. So we could be like The 300. Isn't that about the old battle? Is it Thermopile, something like that?
It's some epic war battle.
Yeah, so let's like dress up in epic war attire, and I don't know. That could be a good idea. I don't know. I don't know much about the battle. I remember. Wait, they held off the whole army of Xerxes, isn't it? I'm trying to Google it, but I don't have Wi-Fi like here, so my Wi-Fi doesn't work. I'm at the cove in the middle of nowhere. So I think they held off the whole. Was it Spartans? 300 Spartans held off the whole army of Xerxes at some pass in Greece. So it could be like you and me in battle gear holding off. Who could we hold off? I don't even know.
What about Todd?
Todd, who's Todd? We can hold off the Lutherans. We can us with the Lutherans.
All right, if the three of us did a arm wrestling match, who do you think would win?
I think Todd.
You think Todd would beat us both?
I think so. I mean, I would beat you, but I don't know about Todd.
Is it because you have old man strength?
Wow! Is that a thing?
No, it is. Old man strength is a thing. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember Seinfeld, Mandelbaum?
That's right.
Anyways, enough with that. Today we have a question from Tom, and he is planting a church just outside of Philly. And this is a great one about collaboration. So let's listen in.
Hi, my name is Tom Harkness. We're going to be planting a church this year just outside of Philadelphia. And my question to you today is, how do you get old established churches, even old denominations, to participate in this new church planting movement? Thank you. I look forward to your answer.
I look forward to our answer too. I don't know what it's going to be. It's always kind of a mystery until we sort of come in.
Yes.
Wow. So I mean, this is the kind of the question of the day, because I mean, how do we get the established church off the sidelines of church planting in a way, because many in the established church actually see church planting as almost a competition to them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why would you want to plant more churches when the reality is that there are a lot of dying churches? And so I think that's one of the questions you have to kind of quickly get through, is the acknowledgement that, you know, you can, established churches can and should be involved in church planting, because it's an opportunity to share the gospel through the starting of new congregations, because actually Jeff Farmer did his PhD dissertation years ago and showed that it actually can be, I think it was 76 churches, one control group that wasn't involved in church planting, but of equal health with the other group that was involved with church planting. Remember, they were of equal health, and the church planting churches got healthier. So it was actually good for them, so there's 100 reasons to be involved, but there is a sense that a lot of people don't jump right in because of maybe fears and concerns. What would you add, Mr. Daniel?
Well, so it's interesting. I was at our local library here, and the librarian was the church administrator. I guess back then it was, equivalent to today's executive pastor. at a church in Chicago. And this was a while back when Jim Tomberlin was still there and when multi-site was kind of getting started.
Did you know I was hanging out with Tomberlin this week? Did you know?
Oh, really?
If you go back my Twitter feed, you'll actually see he tweeted because we were in my little Volkswagen Bug, my 1971 convertible Volkswagen. And it was him, Rick Blackwood from Christ Fellowship Miami, Herschel York, professor at Southern Seminary. We're talking about some partnership stuff. And so you just mentioned, I mean, there it is. There's Tomberlin right there. And so any fun times? Just sorry, random. Keep going.
That is random. And it's random how my librarian...
Yes.
Anyways, that Tomberlin consulted with his church and they went to multi-site. And it's interesting because he was like, oh yeah. And back then, you know, Tomberlin was saying, hey, I know a lot of churches aren't going to like this, but what would it look like for us to go into established dying churches and take them over as campuses? And then I was like, I don't know if you've been reading much these days, but that's becoming more and more of a thing. So I bring that up not to say, hey, go to all the old established churches and say, I'm going to take you over.
Dude, that was not, I mean, I think you've kind of ruined this question totally because that's like the fear. We're talking about you are not good at this. You know, this is like, are we really going to make it to the third 300th episode? So the answer is not, how can established churches be involved in church planning? Shut down and give us your buildings. That's not what we're talking about.
No,
there's
of course.
Wonderful established churches.
Yeah, and that's
so
why I
want you to repent.
Yeah.
I want you to repent and back that up and kind of reconsider this. Try that again.
No, I brought that up because you said exactly what I wanted to happen. That is the fear, right?
That's Oh, okay, good. Okay, good. So that was like a trick. So, okay, I was tricked.
But that is the fear, and that you're right, and I'm glad you brought up Jeff Farmer's research on that, and in Planting Missional Churches, we shared about his research on how planting benefits the planting church. So, I mean, when you go and when you talk to established churches and when you bring about that, when you have those conversations with them, obviously go with a posture of humility, with a posture of, hey, what can I learn from you? Can I kind of sit at your feet? Can I take you out for a meal or a coffee just to learn? Because there's a lot that you can learn from what they've done, what they've tried, how basically, you know, kind of the history and by listening to them, you're offering respect. And I guess, you know, you're kind of saying, hey, I'm not here to take over. I'm not here to, all my marketing is not going to say, hey, don't like how church has been done. Come see a new way of doing church, right? I mean, you know, come before them and say, hey, what would it look like? I mean, who do you see as the unreached people groups in this area? Who in this area, in this neighborhood, are you not reaching? And seek to form kingdom partnerships around that because they are thinking, hey, is that guy just going to come and steal my, you know, steal our church and cause a split and do that? So actually alleviate that by asking different questions.
Well, that was actually way better than I saw that going. So I just want to retract. Now I'm going to walk back all of my criticism because that actually was pretty good. So years ago, I was a professor of church planning, three of the longest years of my life. While I was there, I taught, intro to church planning, which is a lot kind of like our course that we do at new churches. Essential church planning. Thank you. But then I did an advanced church planning course. And so everyone had to do a case study. And one of the things I thought was interesting was, and I did it maybe five times, so basically you take the intro and then the advance. And in the case studies course, five classes, I don't know how many students there were, dozens of students. And one consistent theme is that the majority of time in the case studies, there was a broken or perhaps damaged relationship with the established or the mother church that sent them out.
Okay.
And which was fascinating to me. And so one of the things I start talking about is how to have that sense of greater clarity. So you need to make sure, you know, you need to be on the same page doctrinally. I mean, what do you believe about the baptism of the Holy Spirit? What do you believe about spiritual gifts, for example? You know, because you got to have some commonality. What do you believe about baptism, water baptism? You know, what does that look like? You know, so there's that. But then you need to agree on how much autonomy you have. You know, I mean, does the daughter church make these decisions or does the mother church make these decisions? But I think part of the reality is a lot of times mother churches didn't feel respected. And I think that's part of why this question is even being asked, is are there places that we can add a greater sense of respect to the established church, which is, you know, God has chosen the church, Ephesians 3:10. God has chosen the church to make known his manifold wisdom. So I think when you begin to build that kind of partnership, you're going to have a higher likelihood or likeliness of people being involved in church planting. I think that's key.
Yeah, definitely. And as it relates, so that was the one side, right? How do you get older established churches to participate in a new church plant? Definitely that posture of respect. But then there comes the other side of the question, which is the denominational side. And I remember having a conversation with a planter who is in a conservative, I mean, I don't necessarily want to name the denomination, but it's a conservative denomination, and they're not really known for their multiplication efforts. So as we talk about church multiplication movements, and even in, you know, multiplication today movements, or even the whole vision of 1,000 churches, I mean, this denomination would not even be close to planting a dozen in the next year, because there are so many hoops that planters need to go through in order to get ordained, in order to plant, in order to, you know, such and such and such. So in those cases, what advice would you give a planter who it's not necessarily in a Baptist context, but in not necessarily high church, but there's just a lot more hoops that they need to jump through with their denomination before they can plant. How can the planter kind of lead up and help the denomination become more, you know, kind of multiplicative in their efforts?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the challenges too, is the more connectional a denomination is sometimes the less entrepreneurial it can be. Now, that doesn't necessarily, I mean, there's, you know, my understanding is there are two offices in the local church, that of pastor, elder is one, and then deacon is the other. So about my Anglican friends got bishops, and so they're going to have that, or you might have
canons.
Yeah, there you go. We know some of the canons, and yeah, they're sometimes they just going to shoot off. But anyway, a little joke there. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think that you've got to get a picture that the complexity of the denomination does reduce entrepreneurial opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I was talking recently to a Lutheran group, is that they kind of don't have a lot of entrepreneurial planters because their system has sort of squeezed them out. Now, on the other hand, a lot of them would say, man, we've seen your entrepreneurial stuff in non-denominational evangelicalism, and it's just not pretty. And it is true. I mean, there are, sometimes it's a mess. But I think that you have to kind of walk through those processes. And that may mean, first of all, let me say this. If you're a non-denominational charismatic church, or if you're an independent Lutheran church, and there is such a thing, you've still got to build some relationships with people in your church families, you know, other churches in your community, but also churches in your neighborhood. But inside of a structure that's very connectional, you're going to have to really do that intentionally. And so what I would do is just strategically sit down and say, you know, who are the 10 partners I need to talk to? Go to them one at a time, cast a vision, help you understand what you're not going to do. I'm not there to take people from your church, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. And Tom and everyone else who is listening, even if you've planted recently or you're thinking about multiplication, because as we kind of look at our statistics and who listens to the podcast and comes on our on newchurches.com, I mean, we have a ton of actually established church pastors and multi-site churches just as much as our church planters that are coming on our site and listening to our stuff. So whether you're an established church, a multi-site church, or a plant, or about to plant, I love what you just said, Ed. Why don't you take a piece of paper and list 10 churches in your neighborhood and in your area that you are going to, in the next month, or maybe over the next 10 weeks, have a conversation with, and pray as you're driving to meet them, pray that God would open up doors for kingdom collaboration, because that's one of the one of the practices of multiplication that we unpack in our book Multiplication Today, Movements Tomorrow, that lead to a church's greater likelihood to multiply in their first 5 years.
Yeah, no question. I think that's a good reminder. So again, back to, you know, we want church to multiply in the first 5 years, but back to the issue. So how much, you know, here's the thing. I don't think you're going to get everybody to be excited about church planting. I wish you could. I wish we did. But I think you can maybe diffuse some of the conflict. You can lessen some of the criticism, and you can bring on some allies. But don't think you could get everybody to be an ally or everyone to be a partner. But if you can, you know, diffuse some of the conflict, you lessen some of the criticism, and bring some allies on board, Well, I think that's better for the kingdom. I think it's better for the gospel. And I think it's worth your time and effort actually to do so.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for listening in. And if you haven't yet rated or reviewed us on Apple Podcasts or on iTunes, please be sure to go and do that, because we read through the reviews. It helps a ton for us to get better. And if you have any ideas or suggestions for episode 300, be sure to stick them in there too. We'll catch you next time.